Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 78 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming, news and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. It's been another great month of gaming here in the gaming capital of the world. How you doing, Cody?
Doing all right. We apologize for the unplanned delay between we had a sickness delay and a vacation delay, we didn't plan that one out, and a holiday delay, I guess, right. We'd throw in there. So our apologies.
You can tell the sickness delay might be lingering a bit due to Cody's enhanced radio voice right now.
Yes, hello.
Hi there. But we're back to talking about gaming because, well, there is some football going on. I know, you know.
There is. Right now, the Patriots are winning in the AFC Championship game, but hopefully that changes.
Yeah, well, we're recording on Sunday right as the
NFC. That shows how dedicated we are.
That's right. Those games are going on literally 5 feet away from us in the other room, but we're not watching them.
No.
We're bringing content to you. Yeah.
I guess the games aren't literally happening.
They're happening on the TV. So we're getting real excited about the Super Bowl being here in Indianapolis. I know I've mentioned a couple times that I'm going to be a Super Bowl volunteer. I got my uniform, and so I got all the cool NFL swag that they give you.
You look good.
I get the credentials. It's like this little plastic card that says, you know.
You're legit.
Says I'm legit.
You're exceedingly legit to the point where quitting, not an option.
Exactly.
Would not be a favorable choice.
Thank you, Chancellor Hammer.
Thank you.
But anyway, so that'll about wrap up football season for us and the Colts season. Long gone, maybe better next year.
But everyone will get to see the gaming cap of the world on the international stage
right.
Here in a few weeks. So
that's a good point. So
enjoy,
you know, for those of you who have never been to Indianapolis or never seen it, great opportunity now to see kind of what our city has to offer, and I'm sure there'll be lots of shots from that on ESPN and various networks. So
what do we have to offer?
Well, we have to offer gaming content, as always. We're here to talk about games, board games, card games, role-playing games, all that sort of stuff, and we're going to get back into it with going to start off with just a rundown, which will be our normal list of stuff we've been playing, which is pretty extensive, I think. And then by a demand of the listener on our guild.
Of the listener.
A listener.
That's right.
Which may represent many.
Sure.
We're going to be having a little edition of the GM Academy to talk about the new hotness from Wizards of the Coast that might be coming out. And we're going to do a review.
Yes, right? We're going to do a buy, try, or deny over one of the more polarizing games that's come out recently, and that's Risk Legacy. It's the game where it changes every time you play it, and some people said, oh, that's really awesome. Some people have cried foul and said it's just a money grab. We're going to tell you right down the line if you should get it or not.
And fear not, this is going to be a spoiler-free review. We're only going to be giving you any things that you can find in the basic rule book after opening the box. So nothing.
Listen with confidence.
Yeah. We're not going to give anything away there. And hey, stay tuned to the very end of the episode because we're going to end the show with a big announcement.
Big.
So, you know, be sure to don't fast forward through the big announcement, all right? Got to listen to that.
Absolutely.
But we're going to start off with the rundown as always. You ready?
Let's do it.
That's time once again for the rundown. We're going to tell you about all of the games and geekery we participated in this last month. And but first, as always, we need to give our due penance to our great sponsor, Myriad Games, that they sponsor our show on behalf of. They sponsor our show on behalf of Game On, but that doesn't make any sense at all. No, they sponsor Game On with Cody and John on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere.
Nice job.
And Cody, tell us what's going on with Myriad this month.
Well, we're always talking about the MVP memberships, and right now is the time to get on one if you don't have one or upgrade the one you have, because if you go to myriadgames.com/MVP, you can see the leveled up, the upgraded MVP membership experience where you can kind of, you have more of a hand in customizing how you want to spend your MVP benefits. So head on over to myriadgames.com/MVP and sign up today.
Is there a leveled up logo? Because it looked like the logo was cooler.
Yeah, everything has been overhauled. So check that out.
It's pretty nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's start with you. with the rundown. What have you been playing since, well, since like Christmas, right?
Yeah, yeah, let's go back. It's kind of hard to, I played the Disney World game. That was fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll hit the high points on these. It's not like we're going to go through absolutely everything we've played.
Sure. Probably my highest point is got to play the Big Daddy Eclipse.
Yeah.
A game that's really hard to find now, and I think selling for like $150 on Cool Stuff Inc. and some places.
Are you keeping your copy?
I am. just wait for the reprint, guys. You don't need to spend, you know, half again as much as the game cost.
I don't know, man. Reprints not coming until like April or May.
Patience. But I'm here to say I got to play a three-player game. It was me, John, our buddy Dare. We played a three-player game, and we really liked it. I think Dare was a bit more hesitant, but I think it's because it was the length of the game. This is, I would say, a light space kind of 4X game. I mean, it's not going to be as deep as like TI or Space Empires or anything. It's definitely on the lighter side. It's, once everyone knows the rules, probably about 30 minutes a player. And the interesting thing is it's like TI and Through the Ages had a baby and it's Eclipse.
Yeah.
I mean, there are elements from Twilight Imperium, there are elements from like Through the Ages and other Euros, and it just works. I really enjoyed it, and I'm glad I game shared, and I'm glad I picked it up. Because now it's a 4X game I feel I can get to the table and get done in 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah. No, I really, really like this game a lot. And I put this out on Facebook, on my Facebook, but I think that I think it's true that I think it may be the best game I played last year from 2011. I'm not sure yet. I got to kind of cull through all that, and
yeah,
we're actually in the
definitely got to get another play in.
Yeah, I got to get another play in. But just on first blush, it was. I mean, it just, I love games where everything just makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing that's hard to remember.
We hardly referenced the rule book once after we learned it.
I know.
On a first play.
Yeah, yeah. And I love that because it seems like it's hard to, I think it's one of the hardest parts of the game design is making things intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no recipe for how to make something intuitive, but this game has definitely done that where, because I've had games that are much, much simpler than Eclipse. That I continually, every time I play the game, I have to pull the rule book out.
And,
you know, because it's just not intuitive. It doesn't just immediately catch you. Or the iconography on the board or the cards isn't good enough for you to understand what's going on. But it was great on this one. And so I feel like we could pick that game up right now, pull it out, and probably wouldn't even need the rule book to be able to play it.
Yeah. I mean, we might bust out a full review on that one.
Yeah.
Just so you can get the full experience. But definitely a game to watch if you're into that kind of thing at all. And if you're more of a Eurogame fan, you still might want to give it a try because I think there's enough there to keep it interesting.
Yeah.
So Eclipse, very good.
Yeah. Well, one more thing about that, because I think the thing that I probably liked about it the best is that I'm slowly starting trying to tweak my likes and dislikes to where I can really pinpoint if someone were to ask me, what kind of games do you like? You know, my answer for years has been, oh, I like all kinds of games. But no, there's really certain things that I like better than other things. And I think that for the one thing about this game that makes me like it so much is that it's a complex game, but as you're thinking about what to do, there's just a limited number of choices.
Mm-hmm.
But they're interesting choices, and they really can help to further your game in one way or another. But you just never have to feel like there are 50 things that I can do, and oh my gosh, what I'm going to do. You don't feel overwhelmed by it. You know, there's four or five things you can do, and then even like the technologies, the way those kind of come out on the board randomly, you may not have all the technologies to choose from. So I just like that because I'm just not good at games, and so it's good to not have too many choices. Now, having said that, I believe I did win that
you
game.
You did win that game. It was close. Okay. We'll definitely be playing that one more. One we might not play more. We might play one more time. Just is Carnival. It is one of the Kickstarter darlings that came out, and we played a three player game, right?
Yeah,
me, you, and Kaylin, I think.
Yeah,
yeah. And at Carnival, it's a neat little game. It's basically a set collection game with a bit of a random element as far as taking cards from people, taking cards from discard, drawing cards, things like that.
And it's like a dice rolling thing.
Yeah, there's a dice rolling mechanic. Yeah, but it's hard. It's a set collection game with a carnival theme. There was a lot of buzz about this one. I was not wild about it.
It's fine.
It's the game. It's fine.
It's in a nice, cute little box, and the components are nice, and it's just it was fine.
Yeah, it's not a bad game by any means.
Yeah,
there are worse games.
There's in the game, there are these little tickets that are sort of like you can sort of use them to cancel. Is it to force a reroll, I think, or is it
to
cancel?
You can use them to block someone's move. You can use it to reroll your own dice.
Yeah, it's kind of the I don't think so tokens, yeah. You know? And so I felt like the whole game became about that.
Yeah.
Like you're trying to do these things, but then if, you know, all the actions where you could steal something from someone or trade with someone against their wishes, you know, you had to kind of keep an eye on those little tokens. And so I just
felt like every time you completed a set, you got another ticket.
Right.
I mean, to a maximum of three. Already, I've seen where people are just limiting the tickets.
Oh, yeah.
And that seems like a good fix. But
because that just seems like, you know, if you're trying to build something in a game, any kind of a game, and you're just constantly having someone say, nope, you know, and you're mm-hmm. playing something on you, you just start to get a little frustrated with it. That's a little bit of how I felt with that one.
Yeah. I'll give it a try or two more. But it was okay.
It was all right.
It was fine.
Sure.
Moving on. I got to try Glenmore for the first time.
Oh, a Scottish game.
Scottish. The tile laying, kind of a very much a Euro game, I would say.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I liked it. Kaylin and I played two player. There's a kind of a setting in the rules where with a two or three player game, there's a dummy player. And usually I don't like when there's a dummy player besides me.
Hey, I was going to say there was two dummy players in your game.
Yeah, I saw you salivating over there. But in this one, it was nice because the dummy player did not require a lot of maintenance. It's pretty much, you know, you rolled the die and whatever number came up, you moved it that many tiles and just eliminated that tile. Oh. It was pretty much like just a third person taking tiles.
It's like Kingsburg, I think, is a good third player mm-hmm. mechanic, or a dummy player mechanic.
Yeah. So this one was nice because, you know, it's very Euro. There's a lot of decisions to make and a lot of, you know, ways to go about your victory. But it's got, you know, the Scottish theme is pretty pasted on. It could really have been anything and yeah. been fine. But we found it to be a nice, relaxing tile line game. Probably plays 45 to 60 minutes. It plays 2 to 5, I think.
Hmm.
And I think it would be a good experience. So that was a surprise. It was a Euro game that was on my radar and actually hit. So
I thought I had heard something about this game to where it was supposed to be like a bigger box game. Like a big, you know, because the game, the box that comes in is kind of small. The tiles mm-hmm. are kind of small. That it was supposed to be a kind of a bigger production to it.
Oh, okay.
Because it sort of feels like there's a lot of game there for just the little tiles and little pieces that you have with it. Mm-hmm. But I got to play this at IndieCon last year. I think Stephen Conway from The Spiel taught me how to play. Oh, watch out. I just dropped that name. don't step
careful
on.
With that.
Yeah. But yeah, I really enjoyed it too, although I had a little bit of hard time getting my brain around the the little track, you know, that was a little bit tricky for me to understand. But
yeah, as usual with any Euro game, especially on the first play, Kaylin just destroyed me. but it was fun. I have to say though, the rules that come with it, terribly written rules.
Oh really?
Yeah. I mean, I had to sit down and really kind of just forcefully read it twice, and where I just read it start to finish. I had to do it about twice because it's just the rules are, they're just very bloated for what they are. Like, for one instance, there's a tile called the Distillery, and it's literally, you take a yellow cube, you turn a yellow cube into a whiskey barrel. If you don't know the game, you can look it up. But the rules described it in such this superfluous thing where it's like, remove a yellow cube from your supply area into the general stock, and then take a whiskey barrel from the general supply. And I was like, yeah, I got it.
You know,
you don't need to spend two sentences on that. But yeah, Glenmore, a good game, and the occasional Euro, so keeps the wife happy, I say.
Well done.
Yeah. Another game I got to try for the first time is Flash Duel, second edition. This was a little game kind of set in that Yomi Fantasy Strike universe it's the second edition, and they really bumped up the quality of it. They put in a big box, put in a lot of game modes. And it's very similar to En Garde, which
it's like Kanitsia joint.
Kanitsia joint.
Wow.
And there was a little kerfluffle on BGG because apparently Christian Peterson thought it was too Christian Peterson of Fantasy Flight fame thought it was too similar to En Garde, and basically had like a hissy fit in one of the Flash Duel announcement threads on BGG, like a posted news thread.
You know, he's probably just pissed off because he wanted to make a version of it in the Terranoth universe.
Yeah, that would be $80.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Look under Flash Duel on BGG. It's pretty easy to find. It's very surprising to see. I mean, it's like another CEO calling out someone and saying,
wow.
Yeah, it's...
I got to check that out.
A little unnecessary. But so Flash Duel itself, I didn't have real high hopes for it going in. It just looked really simple. But I really like it. It's a light... two-player game. You can even play with more people. There's a raid mode where you play it as a co-op. You can play as a co-op with a traitor element. You can play a team game. And it's essentially just a game about two pawns fighting. If you can imagine like a 20 or so space track, each character starts at a different end. And it's all about maneuvering forward and backwards and using powers. And basically, if you get one hit on your opponent that they can't block or retreat from, then you win the round. And it's best out, 3 out of 5. But there's a lot of little things going on, and it has all of the characters from Yomi. I mean, I think it has like 20 characters, and so and it has their powers in it, and it's a nice light game, but it's got enough crunch to make it feel substantial. And I liked it better than Yomi, actually, as far as my fighting game fix. So
cool, I'll have to try that one.
Yeah, Flash Duel, second edition. Some other quick hits I'll go into. Played Cash and Guns at the game night. Hadn't played that in a while.
Yeah.
I was utterly shot down. I don't back down. I'm just going to keep my gun up. And yeah, I was the first one out.
Of course.
Played Resistance. Always a good game. With the right group, it gets better and better. I mean, we had a game where I was a spy and wasn't even suspected until the last round. Until the very last vote, and that's what did me in.
You guys were raucous too. I was sitting next to you to your table playing a Euro game.
Uh-huh.
And man,
I know you guys look like you're having a lot of fun.
At some point, Greg and I started just like shouting over to the other table. Well, I guess I'll place my sheep tile down. Yeah. Now. Making decisions over here.
Yeah, I saw on the for that game they had to mute the colors like every other Euro game because they didn't want you to get too excited.
That's like right.
A bright red. Oh no, it's too bright.
It came with a vial full of pills. I don't know what those are for, but.
And finally, the last thing I'll mention that I've played is we started a small Castles and Crusades game. I hadn't been doing a regular RPG in a while, so we brought that out. And that has been a surprise hit, actually. It's basically a rules-light D20 system game that takes the feel of like first edition D&D, but the rule set of like a really stripped-down third edition D&D. It's kind of the best of both worlds, and it is really a fun game. So looking forward to getting my materials from that Kickstarter that I talked about a few episodes back. That's coming any day now, so that will only enhance my C&C experience. And I think that's it. At least that's the high points.
All right, cool.
Boom.
Let's see. Let me dial back to the Christmas holiday there. Week before Christmas, I went to Virginia to visit some family. And, you know, none of my family in Virginia are gamers at all. So I always like to bring some things to try to evangelize the hobby a little bit. So I brought a whole bag full of stuff in hopes that I could get at least one or two things to the table. And the only thing that came to the table was we played some Tumbling Dice.
Of course.
Which my cousins seemed to enjoy that one. And we played we played about half a game of Survive.
Okay.
With me, Rachel, my kids, and my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom is very well-meaning. She's always willing to, if I say, you know, will you play something, she'll give it a shot. But, you know, I have to pick very carefully what games she would be the worst analysis paralysis player ever, like playing Yahtzee. I mean, just because she's just so worried about making the wrong move. And so even with Survive, she was just a little bit paralyzed by where to move the shark and stuff. So, or which tile to pick or whatever. But she was a good sport about it. And, you know, the kids like that game because they can attack each other and, be typical brother and sister. So that was it as far as the trip to Virginia. So got it, you know, pretty much that was it.
Ouch.
That's okay, though. Got to spend some good time with the family there. Let's see. Game night. Went to several game nights, game nights. Played some Euro games that I haven't played in a while that I really enjoy. I got a game of Fresco in, and I really still enjoy that game. Played a four-player game of that in which I don't have a specific, you know, named strategy for the game. I tend to kind of hold back, mix paints, and then, you know, go for a lot of big stuff.
I have a strategy for that game.
Don't play it.
Endure.
Oh, come on. You thought that game was okay, right?
It was fine.
But my friend Heather, she has this strategy. She told me ahead of time that she says, I'm not very good at games. I'm like, oh, kindred spirit. And she said, but I just always work to not be last. I'm like, okay, well, that's it. And so her strategy.
Set that bar high.
Yeah, well, you know. But she was having a good time working her strategy, which was the money strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So in the game of Fresco, you're trying to get points for completing chunks of tiles on this fresco by painting them. But then at the end of the game, you also get, I believe it's 1 point for every 2 money or every 3 money, something like that. And so there's a whole section of the game where you can get money. You're usually getting money so you can buy paints and do that thing. But you can also just hoard your money if you want to. And that's what she did. And she was in absolute dead last by a bunch of points, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then at the very end, she's like, okay, now we get to the money part where we score all the money. And she pulls back her screen. She's got this hoard of tokens. And she ended up coming in, I think, second place.
Oh, yeah.
Just for the money strategy. So well done with that. And after that, we played a game of Blue Moon City, which...
That's a good one.
I tell you what, every time I play that game, I still really like it, if not like it even a little bit more. It's one of the... I think it may be my favorite Reiner Knizia game. And yeah, it's just a lot of fun and cool card play, and the artwork on it is really neat. So I like that game a lot.
More so than Escalation?
Well, Escalation, a fine game, but I think Blue Moon
with an engaging theme.
Indeed. Let's see, what else did I play? Well, okay, so that was one game night. Then the next game night, 2 weeks later, we played a game of Risk Legacy, and we'll talk a little bit more about our multiple games of Risk Legacy when we get to our review. So played one game of that, and then pulled out a game that I got on GameShare from Myriad called The Castles of Burgundy. This is, I believe the German title for this is Die Burgen von Burgund.
Yeah, or as everyone was calling it, the Castles of Ron Burgundy.
I like that. So
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
This is a Euro game from Stefan Feld, and I guess it was a real hot property at Essen this year. So I wanted to check it out because it's a Euro game that has a dice rolling mechanic to it, and we've seen a lot of real good games with dice rolling mechanics that have sort of a Euro flavor to them. In this game, you have a bunch of like a hex. Everybody's their own player board that has sort of a hex map on it, and these little hex tiles that you're getting off of a common board in the middle. The whole idea being that you're using dice, and those dice will determine what actions you can take to pull the tiles off the board and into your like storage area on your board, and then to take those things from the storage area and put them onto your estate, which is your map. And by putting those things on the board, special abilities are triggered, extra actions and other things that you can do. All the tiles, there's I want to say 5 or 6 different colors of tiles, and each color has its own specific thing that it does. And there's even a lot of variety. One set of tiles, the yellow tiles, there's 26 separate, distinct, different tiles that have different abilities on them. And that's the only thing that you kind of have to continually look up in the rule book, but at least there's like a number on the tile so you can easily reference it in the rule book. But I really, really enjoyed this game a whole lot more than I thought I would. When I saw all the little hex tiles and everything and saw sort of what you were doing, it's like, oh man, this is like you know doing things in a Euro game for no real reason. And to a certain extent that's true. The theme is ridiculously pasted on. It's basically kind of almost abstracted as far as get things onto the board, connect things together, and that will get you victory points. But it's a little better than other games that I've played that do that. Like Hansa Teutonica is one that I think is really bad about just having really no theme whatsoever. It's almost an abstract strategy game that they try to just lay some Euro theme over top of. This one's a little bit better than that. I think the dice rolling makes it a lot of fun, and there's just a lot of different ways that you can get points. So you can sort of plan out a different kind of strategy based upon what you want to do. Plays relatively quickly. I think I played a 3-player game of this at the game night. It probably would have taken, I would say, an hour and a half if we knew the game cold.
Mm-hmm.
As it stood, it took us about 2 hours, and we didn't get quite all the way through it.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that, and I hadn't played it before either, but then the next night I taught my wife how to play it, and we played a 2-player game. And what I discovered is this is a really good 2-player game. Ooh. Scales really well, and I think it plays very fast. Matter of fact, I just told Rachel, I got this thing on GameShare, and I want to try it out to find out if I want to keep it or not. But you know, the main determiner of whether I'll keep it is if you like it at all. You know, if you like it even a little bit, I'll keep it. So we might be able to pull it out sometime and play two player. And she said, okay, yeah, we'll give it a try. And so there's five phases in the game, and they're the same. You just repeat them five times. But so I set up the first phase, and we played through it. And I just said, I just want to give you a feel for it. And it was pretty much like like someone at the bar getting another drink. We'd finished one phase, and Rachel's like, set up another one. And then we finished the second phase. She's like, okay, one more. And we ended up playing the full five phases of the whole game. So at the end of phase one, she didn't like it. At the end of phase two, she was confused. And by the end of phase five, she really liked it. So it took a little while for her to get into what the strategy was and the mechanics of the game. But I would recommend this one. I told Cody that we're going to have to pull that one out. I think Caitlin would enjoy it, and I think you should give it a try. It could be on that list of Euros that you can deal with,
and that she'll destroy us in.
Oh, I have no doubt that Caitlin will absolutely destroy us, but that's okay.
That's where you play for second.
Well, I usually do when we play with Caitlin. Let's see what else. We've talked about playing Eclipse and Carnival. I think those are the main things that I've been playing, with the exception of I've played quite a number of games of the Pokemon trading card game. Uh-oh. With Ethan. He is absolutely obsessed with Pokemon now. Like, this is probably the most he's ever been. You know, kids get into things. Sure. You know, they're like, oh,
more than Star Wars.
Oh yeah, like factor of 10 probably. Yeah. I don't know what it is about the Pokemon universe. Is it's almost like it's akin to being like a zoologist at the zoo, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know all these things about animals. I mean, all these Pokemon are basically these animals or these creatures that have these different stats and different things. They evolve into other things and they get more powerful. They have all these different attacks. And so we just bought him a couple days ago this Pokemon, like, sort of it's like an encyclopedia of Pokemon and everything. And he has been reading that like the Bible. I mean, and it just comes up to me and he goes, Daddy, did you know that Wingling evolves into Bangalang? I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
And also with you.
Yeah. But he is so eaten up with it. And you know, so I think, and he plays the video game, and we've been playing the card game. And I tell you what, it's a solid card game. I think I mentioned that in a previous show, but it's a, you know, I know it's kind of poo-pooed by a lot of hardcore gamers because it's more, you know, more of a kid's game, I guess. It's more simplified. But no, it's a solid game. And he's actually beaten me fair and square several times. So,
what's his favorite Pokemon?
Oh, he's told me it's some dragon thing with a Dirigeron or Dirigon. It's like this multicolored dragon.
I have no idea.
Dirigeron. They all have really dumb names. Yeah. But, my favorite Pokemon name is Woobat.
Woobat.
He's a little bat. Yeah. It's like a fuzzy blue bat.
I'm a Raichu man myself.
What?
It's like the Pikachu, right? But it's this little rat thing, yellow rat thing with a big lightning tail.
Oh, nice.
So there you go.
I didn't know you had a favorite Pokemon. This is new.
I do, yeah. Right. I mean, I'm not what you call a big Pokemon fan, but yeah. I know enough street Pokemon to...
Where
I could talk with the Pokemon gangs around here and not get shot.
We've been watching the Pokemon TV show too, because Pokemon media is passing through our house right now. And let me tell you, the Pokemon TV show doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Well, it is anime.
I know. I took Japanese. You and I both took Japanese in school. And I tell you what, the more anime and stuff I watch, the more I just don't understand Japanese culture.
It's messed up.
It's really messed up.
Panty shots for everyone.
Anyway, not in Pokemon.
No.
Pokemon is safe for kids.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, so I think that's all as far as my gaming. Any other geekery you've been participating in? Any TV shows, books, any stuff like that?
I watched the first episode of Sherlock on your recommendation.
Oh yeah,
I liked it. All right, I'm gonna get. I mean, the season's only three episodes, so I can take my time.
Right.
It's an interesting way of doing things. What else? I'm still reading through the second Dresden book. I've been lacking my reading for some reason, so I need to get back on that. No other geekery that I can mention. You?
That you can mention? Is
there
okay. Another secret geekery you couldn't mention. But, I've been wanting to get back into painting. I've still got War Machine stuff that needs painting.
We just need to get back into War Machine in general.
No, that's true, yeah. And I'm thinking if I can really get back on the painting trail, that new models with fresh paint on them.
I've got a battle engine ready to stomp your ass.
Oh, I didn't know you got the battle engine.
I have the K-Dor battle engine.
Oh, dang. Okay, well, so, then we got to get that done.
Yeah.
And I feel bad because you gave me the Avatar of Menoth and Warjack for Christmas last year, and I put it together, but I haven't painted it yet. So that's got to happen. Needs to happen.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Aw. TV shows, movies, I can't really think of anything. Like I said, I've been real interested in this TV show, Sherlock. It's a modern day Sherlock Holmes by the BBC. Only 3 episodes of the show. Other than that, I can't think of too much that I've been doing. Boy, we're kind of lame.
Hey, we're back in the saddle. So
yeah. All right. So I think, is that the rundown?
That's the rundown.
Welcome to the GM Academy, the premier institute of higher learning for both role players and game masters alike. Send your RPG queries and petitions to gameoninbox@gmail.com. And now, please welcome the Chancellor of the GM Academy, Cody L. Jones, Esquire III.
All right, well, it's time once again for the GM Academy.
My robes are donned.
Wonderful. How do they feel? Are they freshly pressed?
Yes, and I've got the what's that called? Is it a cape? Is it the hood? The hood. The doctoral hood.
Oh, okay. That's different from the... Do you get the hat, too?
Yeah, I think that's different.
There's still a hat.
Yeah, a little tam, I guess.
Nice. Well, anyway, Chancellor, welcome to the another edition of the GM Academy, where we're going to be talking about all things role-playing games with our Chancellor, Cody L. Jones.
Howdy.
And today we're going to be talking about not so much a question directly from a listener, like via email or voicemail, but something that was brought up on our guild regarding an announcement that came out just a couple of weeks ago from Wizards of the Coast. Mm. They have announced that there will be some sort of new version of Dungeons & Dragons coming out sometime in the near future.
Yes.
And whether it be called 5th edition or what have you, they're going to be working on it, and there'll be some playtesting involved. And well, I tell you what, basically the listeners want to know, what is your opinion about this, and what do you know about it, and what do you think it's going to do for the hobby in general and for Dungeons & Dragons? So please expound.
Sure. So like John mentioned, Wizards had announced that they're coming out with kind of a new... They're almost kind of going other way, not to say a new edition necessarily. They're saying just kind of almost like a reboot of the system. And to that end, they are very actively promoting that they are seeking fans' input. They're seeking current players. They're seeking people who played in the 70s and everything in between, because they want this to be the people's game, as it were. You know, they want to get all this input. They've also brought back on their staff Monty Cook, who helped with... third edition when it came, he was part of that team that brought D&D into the D20 system and really spearheaded that, and has also written tons of gaming products and is pretty well known in the industry. That got a lot of buzz. So basically, all that's happened right now is that a week or so ago, Wizards put out a call saying, "Hey, we're making this new thing. If you want to be on the playtesting team, you know, send your email." And of course, a lot of people signed up, and it generated a lot of buzz. There was an article in the New York Times and all sorts of other things, you know, that, you know, D&D was kind of entering this new stage of its life, so to speak. The next thing that happened was Wizards announced that they're selling kind of deluxe reprints of the D&D First Edition Player's Handbook, DMG, and Monster Manual. They're just selling these reprints with a portion of the proceeds going to the Gygax Memorial Fund. And what that is in Gary Gygax's home of Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, the city has apportioned a small area of land for there to be like a statue or a memorial or something. But this fund is there for them to basically be able to build a statue. Like, they have a sculptor, the guy who does Dwarven Forge. The sculptor who does Dwarven Forge, he's commissioned to do the statue. And
will it be sculpted out of cheese?
I don't know.
Because it is
Wisconsin. I see what you did there. Mm-hmm. That's a stereotype, Jeff.
sorry, I work with enough people from Wisconsin. It's not. And they'll
agree. Oh, you betcha. but the, you know, I could see that when that's done, you know, people make the pilgrimage to Lake Geneva and rub their dice on Gary's hand, and, you know, get the blessing. You know, oh yeah, I can see that. It's a total nice at the dinner table story.
Yeah.
But the fact, you know, the fund is nice and all, but the fact that they're kind of acknowledging this previous edition and by God selling reprints of the old handbook, it's a hell of an olive branch, I think. You know, I mean, most of the grizzled gamers that I knew that, you know, hated 4th edition and hated modern D&D, they saw that and they just, you know, had a joygasm over it, and they're like, this is fantastic, blah, blah, blah. And so funny because it's this company that they just had been hating on for years and years and years. But on a kind of a larger scale, that almost seems to be an idea of where they're going with this. And they haven't really announced anything else. They've announced the open playtest, and they revealed, you know, these books going for sale. And they've been kind of tight-lipped about everything else. A lot of the information that has come out, you know, rumors and such, is that it's going to be kind of an a la carte system for D&D, where there's a very, very basic rule set that can be used from, you know, from first to fourth, you know, and then everything else is going to be a very modular thing, where you might have one group that plays with a basic set and a couple, you know, like city expansions, because they want to play an urban game. And then you have other people that maybe they want to play a Forgotten Realm sort of a thing. So they play the basic rules and a few of these other rule sets. The idea that groups can pick what they want to do and customize their experience. So you might have, you know, and they're going to use all the rule sets they've ever made. So you have a group that, you know, may have, you know, skills and feats from third edition, but have encounter powers from fourth and have classes from first. I mean, it seems like that's the direction they're going.
So you can purchase accordingly.
Yeah, exactly. You're the path to retail enlightenment will be open. And it's, you know, it's interesting. It's kind of like, you know, I'm going on very limited information. It's hard to make a call. I worry that they may be trying to please everyone, which we know never works, and they may just put out kind of an product. But my biggest thought toward it, and kind of what I wanted to address here at the Academy, was that what I don't understand about kind of old D&D players, it's what I said, your books don't explode when there's a new edition. You know, it was funny when I...
That would be awesome if they did. Would be, you
know, fourth edition comes out, third edition just inflames. No. But
your advice to please get rid of your books immediately.
Guys in suits come and take them. No, but... You know, all through high school and college, when I played in Protolan and in James Gazaway and Mr. G's campaign, my first real D&D game and the one I played in for a decade at least, he used a mishmash of like first and second edition rules. Mainly it was first edition. And all of us at the time, and me usually the loudest of anyone, was always like, why do you use this old system? We've got second edition. And then when third edition came out, it's like, why don't you just use third edition? You know, it's new. It's got stuff coming out. And he never was real, I guess, vocal about, you know, why he wanted to use first or really defended it. It's just that's what he played. That's what he knew. That's what he had the stuff for. And he was comfortable with it. He didn't need to buy anything else. And it's now at this point that I now kind of understand. I'm like, oh, well, you know, it's like, you know, whether you're playing first or fourth or you have a brand new product or 30-year-old product, you're still playing D&D. You know, I mentioned early in the rundown that we just started a Castles and Crusades game. We're pretty much calling it D&D because it's all of us getting together playing a swords and sorcery RPG with dice and spells and all that. You know, it's D&D to us. So I think with this announcement, it's like I'm curious. I'm certainly open to whatever they're doing. You know, I'm not. A lot of people have just shut it down, and I think that's a bad thing. It's like I think you should really give them a look here. Instead of just producing another edition, they're trying to answer fans' complaints. I think they're seeing that fourth edition was not a hit, and while I think it's still a good system, they kind of want to somewhat unite the D&D fan base, and I think that's noble. And obviously, they want to sell product. But
what do you think is the source of the main source of complaints? I mean, I know there have been complaints. I haven't really been following it as closely as you have. But is it old players? You know, who played previous editions, or do new players have complaints as well? Or, you know, what's the main beef with fourth edition?
With fourth edition, the older players say it's, well, actually most of the players say it's very MMO based, which it is. You know, they feel that it doesn't feel like D&D. They say that, you know, when it was announced, the way it was announced was not great. I mean, we were at that Gen Con. It was, you know, they were pretty much out and out lying to people, and they were still releasing third edition products. You know,
like, I got a cool T-shirt though.
Yeah, we did.
It was a nice T-shirt.
Yeah, but it was just, I don't know. It was a very hard shift, and it seemed like they were trying to go for a younger demographic. And I think they even admitted as such they were trying to go younger, and they got kind of a backlash for that. I mean, I understand that to a point. I mean, they are a business. They're there to make money. I can't fault them too much for that.
I mean, has there been some kind of mass exodus to Pathfinder that might be prompting this as well?
Well, that's been a big thing, I think. They're seeing that so many people have gone over to Pathfinder. I mean, Pathfinder outsells D&D now, which, you know, I've always said that has to be a funny board meeting at Hasbro. It's like, the competitor that's beating us is using our old rules that we let them take. Yes, sir. But
who do I need to fire today? How about all of you?
but Pathfinder, I think, in this next year is going to go through their own valley here because they are now experiencing what 3.5 had at the end of its lifespan, where they're forced with, they have a complex rule system. You know, Pathfinder, it's a D20 system, but it's on the more complex end. I think everyone would agree with that. They are pressured both by needing profit and by hardcore fans to produce new product every month or two, like have a big splat book with new classes and spells and stuff. But the problem with 3.5, it got so bloated that it just was almost impossible to run by the book there at the end. And Pathfinder is getting to that point. You know, they had a nice rosy period. They had their big core rule book and they had a few splat books here and there, and life was good. But now they have to decide, do we make this game playable or do we put out product? And they're probably going to put out product first, you know?
Sure.
So, you know, this could be, depending on what comes out, the Monty Cook signing was good for Wizards. That's kind of a show of, hey, we're admitting that maybe we're going to step back a little bit. But I still worry that they're just going to try and please too many people and that they're going to try and make this system that, you know, they've said we're going to take the best parts of all the editions and make a system. It's like, well, what's the best parts of a system, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, we'll see what happens. But my big thing is that you can still get first edition rule books cheap. If that's the game you want to play, then play it.
Go play it.
And they have all the editions you want. You can get it at half price bookstores. You can get them online. It's easy to find. And so whatever they do, if you don't like what Wizards ends up doing, there's so many options. If there were no more RPGs made after today, if just everyone stopped making them, you would have enough material to last 10 lifetimes out there.
Oh, yeah.
So,
because it's all imagination. I mean, there's no limit there.
Exactly. So, I mean, play what you want to play. I would say don't shut it down because, you know, that would be the effing gamer response, in my opinion.
That's right.
You know, it's like everyone complained that 4th edition came out and they said it was terrible. And now that they've made steps, it's like, okay, we're going to change it. Now they're complaining, oh, it's too soon. The change is too soon. It's like, well, what do you want? Do you want them to change or do you want them to keep the crappy product?
Yes.
So gamers, your books do not explode. Your PDFs do not auto-delete. Play what you want to play and have fun doing it.
As we say here at Game On with Cody and John, don't be an effing gamer.
That's correct.
All right, well, Chancellor Jones, thank you so much for your wisdom here in the GM Academy. And I believe that class is dismissed.
It is.
You're listening to Game On with Cody and John. This podcast goes to an 11 on a 20-sided die.
Well, it's time for another buy, try, or deny, and this time we're talking about very exciting game.
Yes.
Very exciting game. And you know, I'm not even going to try to hide the fact before we get to the end of the review that I think this game is really awesome. Right. So, you know, you're getting no negativity from this side of the podcasking table. We're going to be talking about Risk Legacy, which is the newest version of Risk from Hasbro. Have you heard of them?
Yeah.
We don't talk about them too much on this show, but no. From Hasbro.
Hasbro.
Designed by Rob Davio. And Cody, you have a copy of this game.
I do.
And why don't you start off by giving us sort of an overview of what is this game all about? And, you know, gamers have heard of the game Risk for years and years.
Sure.
What's going on with this?
So the fluff with this one is, you know, Risk is pretty much just, you know, dudes on a map, you know,
take over the world.
Take over the world. You know, that's your fluff. In this one, it's, you know, in the year 22, you know, humanity has found the technology to where they can replicate new Earths for, you know, for resources and for population and all that. And so the idea is that every game, every physical copy of Risk Legacy is one of these new Earths, down to the point of each of them have like a little serial number stamped into them. You know, like, we're Earth number 9016.
I didn't even know that. That's why it says Earth number. Yeah. Okay. So I saw that on the board, but yeah, cool.
And so the idea is that it's, you know, it plays very much like Risk. You know, if you're looking for something that's very different from Risk, well, at the service, you're not going to find it. But the idea is that choices you make in a game will affect later games, and to the point where it may cause you to have pause before you make a decision, or it may make you want to make that decision faster. But the idea is that, you know, you'll found cities, you will make changes to the landscape, you will change the way things are scored. Even the rule book has sections where things will be overwritten and changed as you play. And so that each game is different and is just one piece of a bigger story.
When you open the box to this game, which it sort of comes in like a, almost like a suitcase. Yeah. It's got like a handle on it.
Nuclear launch codes.
Yeah. And there's a sticker that covers over the box, the seal in the box that says, what is done can never be undone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, break that seal and then you open the thing up. And so when you open the box up, it looks very interesting because mm-hmm. you've got your normal pieces in a Risk game. You get the dudes. Go ahead.
You have the board.
Yes.
And the board, it's folded up. And the first thing you see is a little thing for players to sign that says, "We, the undersigned, realize what we're doing, and we take responsibility for the changes we're going to make."
That's right. And you sign the board. Everybody mm-hmm. that plays in the game signs the board. So, I mean, if you can sort of think about it in this way, that you're buying a game, but you're almost buying a... It's like you're buying a campaign. Mm-hmm. You know,
An experience.
You're buying an experience, and the game is meant to be played over 15 games.
Right.
Initially. Mm-hmm. Once you've played those 15 games, then no more changes are going to occur to the game, but it can be played in that finished condition, mm-hmm. you know, for on and on, you know,
yeah, if
you
want. Because after that, it's just like playing Risk on that specific Earth with whatever specific rules have come into play.
Right. But you'll spend those 15 games modifying things mm-hmm. and changing those rules and discovering them. So when you after you look at you got the board there, and then you have in all the little bits and components, you've got five different factions mm-hmm. in the game, and they are a various fluffy sort of there's like
you
the,
have
the
like
robots.
The robots, you have just the army, you have the nature guys.
Enclave of the bear or something like that. So yeah, and the miniatures are of, you know, typical Hasbro-ish kind of quality miniatures.
They're good quality, I'd say.
They're not really worth painting if you're, if you're that kind of a person, but you don't really want to do that.
But different sculpts for each army. I mean, that's neat.
Pretty decent there. And you're going to get some initial cards. The game works off of this, Cody and I really couldn't remember. We haven't played regular Risk in such a long time. We couldn't remember how different or similar this was, but there are cards where each card has a particular region on it, and then that region will have a coin value, mm-hmm. and the coins are sort of the resources that you're going to get for conquering areas. When you conquer an area, you have the ability to take one of these cards from a tableau that's that's on a board, and those are going to be worth coins. And later on, you can redeem those coins for either more troops or for victory points. Now, I know victory points isn't usually a word that you'll see in a game of Risk, but that's kind of what you're going for in this game, and this is what makes it a much more streamlined version of Risk, is that you're going for four victory points.
Yep. Four red stars.
Red stars, right. And at the very beginning of the first game, everybody gets one of those red stars. Mm-hmm. And so you already have one, and then you're going to get more stars for taking over the bases.
Well, you get a star for your headquarters.
Right, right.
So everyone starts with two in the first game.
Exactly. So then you basically have to take over two other headquarters to be able to win the game. Mm-hmm. In later games, then, if you have won a... If you haven't won a game yet, then you'll continue to get a star, right? As mm-hmm. to start out with. But if you've won a game, you won't get that initial star. You'll still get a point for your own headquarters, and then you'll get these missile tokens, one for every time that you've won the game previously. The missile tokens can be used during the game to basically change the value of a die to a six. And so that
even a die that someone else has rolled that's not even in a battle you're participating
in. Oh, yeah. You can launch the missile on anybody. Yes. And so that can be very interesting. And the more you win, the more leverage you have to be able to, mm-hmm. to change your outcomes there. So anyway, if you've never played Risk before, you should. It's a it's a good kind of archetypal game of dudes on a map. But
it has the reputation. The regular game has a reputation for running long.
Right.
This game, I would be surprised if you had a single game go over 2 hours.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think the longest one we played is about an hour and a half, mm-hmm. and that was I think our most recent game was probably about an hour and a half to play. Yeah. So it plays very quickly, which is good. Let's just go back up just a little bit to sort of the setup of your first game. You're going to sign that board.
This gives you a flavor of what future things are like,
right? And you're going to turn the board over, and then everybody will get dealt out a faction card, mm-hmm. where it's like a cardboard placard that's that represents your faction, and there are spaces on there for special abilities. There's about four or five of them there, mm-hmm. and you're given an initial card. Once again, let me just reiterate, for those of you who have never played the game here, that everything that we're going to tell you in this review are things that are in the main rule book that mm-hmm. you would do first off. None of it is, we're not going to talk about anything that will change during the middle of the game. Just going to give you the basic conditions there. So you're going to get a card that has two special abilities on it. And so you're going to look at those two special abilities. You're going to pick one. Those special abilities are actually stickers on the card. You're going to peel that sticker off, stick it onto the player board for that particular faction, and then what do?
You, as per the rulebook, destroy the other sticker.
You rip the card up. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, you can destroy it however you feel like it. But we ripped them up.
Put it next to an old D&D rulebook.
Right. So that what's done is done. What is mm-hmm. done can never be undone. You you get rid of that other ability and you never see it again.
And so if this gives you pause, you may be wary because later on you'll be putting stickers on the board itself. And you could be tearing up game cards. You'll be
writing on the board.
Writing on the board. Yep.
And so don't be afraid. You know, it's a new kind of experience. I think that Cody and I would probably agree that it's the most innovative game that we've seen come out in a very long time.
Yeah, I would agree.
It may be, for me, the most innovative concept I've ever seen in a game. But anyway, time will tell. You're going to get and that doesn't even determine what your faction is going to be. Mm-hmm. You're basically picking the ability for one faction, then they're going to be kind of handed out randomly. You'll get your dudes, you'll put the starting dudes on locations, and then you'll begin your turn, your turn is going to involve moving your troops around on the board and trying to kind of push in and conquer other regions. The dice mechanic in Risk is very simple, that you're going to, as you move your guys in, the attacker is going to roll three dice. The defender is going to roll two, a maximum of three or two, depending on how many people they've brought in to the region. And then you basically will compare the highest die values, the winner will keep their troop there. The loser will have to remove a troop. Defender always wins ties. You basically will continue. The attacker will decide whether they want to continue. Or retreat. You'll continue that dice rolling over and over again until you get to a resolution. Either the guy gets completely taken over, or the attacker chooses to retreat. And at the end of your turn, if you have successfully conquered at least one region, then you're going to get to take one of those cards that's on the board that has these coins on it. If the card that you take, the region that's on there has to match a region that you are currently occupying. If you don't have one of those, then you would just take a card that has just a coin on it. It mm-hmm. won't have any country on it at all. Now you may ask, well, you're going to get one anyway with a coin on it. What's the benefit of having being in a particular location then?
What's the benefit of being in a particular location then?
Well, that's another fun thing about this Risk Legacy version, is that there are spaces on each of these region cards for up to six coins, which are represented by stickers. And so as the game progresses, I believe at the beginning, you start off by placing, everybody gets to place stickers on a certain number mm-hmm. of cards.
Right.
So you're increasing the value of certain regions, which then makes those much more attractive to, I believe that in our game, we're up to like the fifth or sixth game. I think Great Britain has four stickers on it or something. Exactly. So, everybody kind of wants Great Britain at this point. So By doing that, you can sort of plan your strategy as to where you want to be, because you might want to be in those locations that will give you more coins. Because like I said, on later turns, you can either turn in coins for you can turn in coins for more troops. And there's like a little track on the bottom that'll say how many troops that you get. I think I forgot to mention this. At the beginning of your turn, you're always going to get reinforcements, which will be in the form of more guys.
That's just like regular risk.
Just like regular risk. Those coins will allow you to get even more, up to, I think the max you can get is like 30 or something, yeah, based upon the coins that you turn in. So,
or you can choose to trade 4 of those cards, regardless of coin value, in for a red star,
right,
a victory point.
So you have to decide, do I want more dudes, or do I want to save my cards so that I can maybe get a victory point for them, which you get to keep no matter what. That victory point can't be taken away from, right, you. So that's the basics of the game. You're pretty much going to play out until someone has gotten 4 victory points and has claimed number of headquarters to get 4 points. And then the fun really begins. Mm-hmm. Because the person who wins the game gets to sign the board. There's, yes, a place on the board for 15 lines where you're going to sign and say say that you won. On the back of your faction card, there are lines where you're going to, every game, you're going to write your name and saying that you played that faction, and then you're going to put your starting location as to where your headquarters was for that game. And then you'll put a mark to say whether you won, whether you held on, meaning that you didn't win, but you weren't completely eliminated off the game board, or were you eliminated completely off the game board. And so you'll just mark those. So there'll be a constant record of that as well. And so then at the very end of the game, if you happen to win, then you get some special bonuses or abilities. Cody, what are those?
Yeah, there's a lot of them for the winner. You get to choose one of them. They range from anything from founding a major city, which is a city that gives you a little extra reinforcements and a guaranteed spot to start in future games. It's a place where, say, you put a major city in Great Britain, only you can start in Great Britain in future games. And you get to name the city. You know, we have some funny names. We have, we have Johnsburg, South Africa.
That's right.
I'm going all like DC Comics on mine, so I've made the Fortress of Solitude and Coast City right now.
And our friend Dave Briel, who's participating in the game, he has founded Briel de Janeiro.
Yep. Dare Grant founded Grantislava, and one of my favorites.
And Greg has made the Greg Barrier Reef, and I believe in Saskatchewan, Grigina.
Yes.
So
there you go.
great names for those cities there too. So.
But other perks include naming continents, and continents you name give you a bonus. You can change the bonus on continents. You can increase them or decrease them. You can cancel scars. Scars are things, I don't want to talk too much about them, but they're stickers that go on the board. You know, it might be a bunker that goes there that helps defense, or an ammo cache that helps attacking things. There are new scars that are revealed through play and get placed on the board. So if there's a nasty one, you know, near or on one of your major cities, you can choose to cancel that. All sorts of good things like that. If you manage to hold on, if you weren't eliminated, which most of the time, if you don't win, you will probably hold on.
Yeah, the only way that you're going to be eliminated is if it gets to the point where every possible region is filled on the board with at least one dude, mm-hmm. and then your guys get completely eliminated off the board, and you have no place to come back on. Normally, if you get completely eliminated, where all your guys are off the board, you'll come back in the next round on a area of your choice that's open.
A legal starting area.
Right, yeah. But if there's no legal starting areas, then you're completely eliminated. We actually haven't had that happen in the game yet.
So if you hold on, you either get to name and found a minor city, which is worth a little less on the population, but it's not a starting zone, but it's something cool you get to do. Or you get to add a coin to a card. Mm-hmm. One of the other things you can do if you win is destroy a card. So like the Great Britain example, you know, say you're tired of Great Britain. You get to, as your perk, say, I'm destroying that card. And then you take and rip up, burn, jettison, whatever you want to do to get rid of that card.
Yeah.
And it's out of the game forever.
I mean, your head may be spinning right now.
Yeah.
Our head was spinning a little bit.
Yes.
But it is a very rewarding experience if you buy into the full experience of mm-hmm. it. That, you know, where if you can get a group of folks together, much like you would get together a RPG campaign, you know, yes. and say, hey, this group of 4 or 5 guys or gals are going to sit together, play this game through 15 games. I think it can be a really rewarding experience. And one thing we didn't talk about is, how are the changes presented?
How are the changes presented in the box?
Well, I was going to ask you that, but I'll answer it.
Oh, sorry.
basically, when you open this box up, I told you the components that are in there, the dudes and the cards and all that kind of stuff. But then there are also packets of cards that are kind of taped to the inside of the box lid that have text on them saying when you're supposed to open them. So they might be things like open this packet of cards or open this packet when a player wins the game for this, or when the player is about to sign the board for the second time. Or what were some of the other ones there, Cody?
It can be, let's see, when all of the minor cities have been founded.
Right, which will probably happen within the first, two or three games. And then there's other ones that are a little bit more tricky, like, if once a player is completely eliminated from the game, mm-hmm. you open up a packet of cards. And when these packets open up, I mean, it's like Christmas morning. Yes. Because it's not just, oh, here's a couple more city or here's some more country cards, something like that. No, these are like, it's a whole assortment of things. It could be new scars. It could be, well, I'm not even going to say what it is. There's lots, but these are going to be the things that will completely change the rules of the game.
And there are two trays in the two large trays where the armies are kept that are sealed as well. That include like when someone uses, when three missiles are used on the same roll, or when someone's about to put 30 or more troops and controls a missile,
yeah.
You open these things then. And I have to say, we've played, five games?
Five games.
The game is so much different.
Yeah, there's so many different rules and different variances have happened that, yeah, it's a completely different game. And very, very cool, the changes that they've made. But now, those two large compartments and I think two or three of the packs of cards, we still haven't opened yet.
Yeah.
And so there's still a lot of game to be played. We're going to be, playing at least once a month for, this whole year, I think, until we get it done. So, and the one last thing, this isn't really a spoiler, unless you're just not observant of the, what's in your box there. But if you take the tray of the game out,
mm-hmm.
underneath, taped to the bottom of the inside of the box is a packet of cards that says, "Do not open, ever,
ever,
ever."
I'm not going to open it.
Did your brain just explode? Cody claims he is never going to open the cards. He is graciously offered at the end of these 15 games, whoever is the final winner of the whole thing, he is going to gift the game to them. And so we have to make sure Cody doesn't win, because I think all the
I wouldn't worry about it.
The other four of us have said we're definitely going to open that pack of cards.
Yeah, because whoever wins the most out of 15 games gets to name the world.
Yeah.
And in my case, I'm going to give them the game. What's great is if there's a tie, it's a roll-off.
Just a straight roll-off?
By the book, unless the rules get changed, it's a freaking roll-off. But I wouldn't worry about me winning. I'm bad at dudes on a map games. I've only won once.
But you've won once. That's good.
I won once.
Yeah. You won once. Dare's won twice, I think. And
Greg's won.
Greg's won once.
Yeah. So
we got to get Dave on the board there with the win.
Yeah. Well, he starts with a VP now. He starts with two VP.
So he'll be ahead to begin with.
He should be able to jump in.
Yeah. So, okay, well, on our show, Buy, Try, or Deny, the segment, we talk about buy points, things that we really love about a game, try points, things that are kind of okay, and then deny points, things that are not good about a game that might give you pause, and we just want to give you a clear picture of whether you want to pick up the game for yourself. So I know that we've pretty much gushed about the game already, but why don't we talk about some buy points, Cody?
There's no game like it. I mean, yes, it's Risk, but it's a game that changes dramatically. Like, these aren't just little things. It's like the red army gets plus one guy. I mean, there are small changes, big changes. You get your money's worth, I think, if you just want world sweeping changes. This game has it, and it breathes life into an older game that kind of gets a bad rap now and then just due to length. And it's a very creative twist on an old favorite, and I think that alone and the creative elements just make it a really home run game.
Yep, I'll echo everything that Cody says. I think it's fantastic the way that the changes happen and the way it's kind of like a surprise. It's not just like you're looking in the rule book and you can read, oh, when we get this many games under our belt, we'll be able to do this. We have no idea what's going to happen.
We have no idea.
And so that surprise element, we've had to be real careful about going on Board Game Geek to make sure that, we don't get spoiled by anything. But, that's one of the really cool parts of the game. Really the risk mechanic itself, the dice rolling and everything, I don't have any problem with that. It can get a little bit monotonous if it happens for too much. But But it really, just, you know, if you're sitting there with your buddies and you're, you know, I'm going to move my nine guys and you're, oh, okay. And you roll off a bunch of times. That's fun, you know, and there's a little hooting and hollering going on with that. That's one of the fun things about the original Risk. So, but I think all of this addition to it is just great. And I feel like this is done to this kind of game what Dominion did. Three or four years ago, where when people sat down to Dominion for the first time, it was like they said, "I've never played anything like this before." You know, and I think it's like that too. That people sit down and they hear about this game and they, maybe they play it for the first time, and the comment is usually, "I've never played anything like this or even heard of anything like this." So I think it's revolutionary, and that's a big word to use for a game, but I think it is as far as gaming goes. Try points.
I would say cost could be a factor. Yeah, I think it retails for $65 American, yep. Which it is Risk at its core. I mean, even with all these cool things, it is Risk. So $65 may be a lot to spend. And I would say if you don't have a dedicated group of at least four, I think you can play with three, but I would say if you can't get more than, you know, if you don't have a dedicated group of four or five people and it's going to be the same people that play it each time, I don't think it's worth picking up. I just don't think it would be as fun if you mixed and matched or didn't have enough people. You got to have a good committed group for this, and if you don't have it, then probably not worth picking up.
I completely agree. I think that is probably the biggest try point, is that if you aren't able to get a committed group of folks together, it's not going to work. I mean, I think you could. There's nothing saying that you couldn't have someone come in and say, "Well, this time, you know, Bob here is going to play Cody because Cody couldn't make it," you know, but it's not going to be the same, you know. It just wouldn't feel the same. You really feel invested in what you've already accomplished in the game. Now, one thing that's nice is that you don't keep your faction. Like, you could play a different faction every game, so it's not just
right
like
now.
That's true. After five games, that's the way the rules are. So yeah, good point there. But no prior knowledge there. But I think that keeping that committed group is important. And one thing I mentioned just a minute ago about Dominion and being revolutionary and everything, I guess a try point about this, or maybe a cautionary point, is, and this doesn't even have, maybe this doesn't have anything to do with buying the game as it is, but I kind of worry about that this is going to start a trend in games like this. Mm-hmm. And then they'll start, we're going to start getting a bunch of, you know, crappy versions of games that you can change up. It'll be Carcassonne, you know, Carcassonne Legacy, you know, and it's just not going to be interesting at all. But I think that something that has this much buzz that's bound to happen. But yeah. But on the good side, maybe this could be the start of some really interesting customizable games like mm-hmm. this. Deny points.
I know some people see it as a money grab. They're like, well, after 15 games, you know, it's nothing. I would say, I mean, I guess this isn't a deny point, but this could be a deny point for some people. I would say if you play a game 15 times, an hour and a half to 2 hour game 15 times, I think you've gotten your money's worth. And much like old RPG books, the game will not blow up after your 15th play. You know, a lot of the novelty's gone because you're just playing a variant of Risk, but I think if it sounds interesting and you have the group, a committed group for it, you should pull the trigger on it, because I think you'll have a lot of fun.
Yep. I would say that I bought Portal 2 for Xbox, and that game probably took me between 10 and 15 hours to complete.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got done with it, I felt like I'd gotten my money's worth for that $60, you know, even though, and that was a relatively short game as far as, you know, it's not like Skyrim or something that you could play for much longer. So I think that much gameplay for that amount of money is a good deal. So overall thoughts, I'm sure we probably give it a big thumbs up, right?
I like it. I'm curious to see what it is at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're a third of the way through and it's already so different. Yep. I can't imagine what the next 10 games are going to hold.
Yeah, we'll keep you posted in the next few episodes about how it's going for us and let you know how things kind of turn out. So that is Risk Legacy from, of all people, Hasbro.
Good for them.
People wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
All right, well, if you've listened this far, you are a committed fan, or you're a fan that should be committed.
And we appreciate that.
Thank you. And we have a big announcement. We have not lied here. We have a kind of a big announcement that impacts the future of the show, as it were. So, John, give him the guff.
All right, so before we had the gap in time here with the vacations and the sicknesses and all that kind of stuff, we had originally planned to do a show about New Year's resolutions for things, gaming resolutions for 2012, sort of to match up with what we did in previous years, and we actually have decided that we're not going to do that, and the main reason is because we sort of mutually come up with one rather large gaming resolution for 2012. And that's that we've actually decided to go ahead and have Game On with Cody and John come to an end.
We're going
to
hang them up.
We're going to hang up our podcasting headphones,
Spurs,
I guess.
Something like that. Implements.
Yeah. And then we'll be finishing out the show here in 2012.
Right, this is the first of the final five.
Yep. We're calling it the final five, and we're going to do five more episodes. This will be the first one of those five. Yep. And so, you know, you still get some great shows from us coming up in the next couple of months, and we're going to wrap up some things that we just loose ends that we haven't
train been able game.
To, we'll hopefully, well, if we don't do that train game episode, we'll at least review a couple of train games.
That's right. And we want to let you know that this is no, you know, we didn't have a fight or anything, or we didn't get offered a large sum of money.
No,
but if anyone would like to offer us a large sum of money, we will.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We, you know, at the end of the day, we're common gamers, and that's been our platform, that's been our pulpit, and you know, at the end of the day, we only have so much time, and we kind of just want to get back to playing games.
Yeah,
we've had a great time with this.
We have had a wonderful time, and we found that as we're over the course of maybe the last year, I would say that when we get together to record the show, we always have a good time recording. Once we get the microphones, you know, turned on, and I still enjoy editing, and you know, and all the stuff that goes along with podcasting. But it's really started to feel more like work than fun. And we sort of had to dial back and ask ourselves, well, why did we get into podcasting in the first place? And I think our reasoning was, as we've probably said before, is that we wanted to sort of add our voice to the mix. We are two friends who've loved to talk about games with each other for several years, and so we thought it'd be cool to set some microphones up and, you know, see if anyone else cared what we had to say. And thankfully, a lot of you have. So, and we very much appreciate that. But you know, that has turned into, from that, it's sort of turned into a lot of new games, a lot of review copies that we've been fortunate enough to get copies of, a lot of you know, relationships with publishers and designers and other podcasters, and it's sort of turned into this sort of bigger thing. Mm-hmm. I guess, and it's sort of gone from something that was just pure fun, two guys with a microphone, to something that's maybe a little bit bigger than what we were. Not what we were intending, but it's just more
sure.
than what we wanted to be, really.
Yeah, we never had the ambition to spin this into something more than a podcast, and I know there are folks who, you know, wanted to move into video or like gaming news, and that's awesome, and I wish them the best. That's just never been our MO. Maybe we're lazy in that respect. We just like to play games, and you know, recording a podcast is as much as we like to do, and we got good feedback on that. And so, you know, instead of just kind of pod fading and, you know, just dying a slow death, we're like, say we're gonna go out on top, go out with a bang, and you know, we're gonna do this and four more, and you know, we might pop up on as guests on other shows here and there, but you know, as far as Game On goes, I can't even say the name. Game On with Cody and
Forgotten
John.
Forgotten it already.
I know, right? You know, we're going to hang it up. So
yeah. So, I mean, that's the big announcement. And, you know, we appreciate all that have listened to us. And hopefully we'll continue to listen for the next four episodes after this. But we really have enjoyed this whole experience. And we hope that the friendships that we've made with other gamers that we've met at conventions and all listeners and other podcasters, you know, we hope that those continue. And we will definitely still be at Gen Con. We'll still be around on Board Game Geek and on other websites that, you know, maybe you peruse as a gamer. And like Cody said, we very well may pop up on other podcasts from time to time. But just as far as our show goes, we're going to go ahead and go out on our terms. I think that's the part I like about it the most, is that we're not just going to make excuses every episode of, you know, 3 months down the road, oh, we just didn't have time and there's lots of other things. And then 6 months later, I've seen so many blogs that start and end that way. Mm. I really should update this blog, you know. We don't want to do that for this show. You know, we feel like you guys deserve a good ending. So that's what we're going to give you. So there you go.
What do you say we close out the show?
Let's close out the first of the final five.
All right.
All right.
Well, that ends a legacy changing episode of Game On with Cody. You could say that.
Yeah. This episode was kind of like a game of Risk Legacy. It's like we opened a packet of cards and all of a sudden everything changed, right? Yeah.
I want to assure the listeners we did not just open a pack of cards. No. It said, if you have a podcast, end it. Oh, okay. But as always, we want to thank our great sponsor, Myriad Games. Check out myriadgames.com/MVP and get your MVP membership today.
That's right. Join us in 2 weeks. We're going to be giving you a real big review of the new hotness we talked about earlier, Eclipse. Mm-hmm. We're going to delve deeper into that one. And for all of you who don't have a copy of it yet, we're going to make you hate us for talking about it because the reprint doesn't come out till April. But we'll be talking about that. And also, one thing we want to mention is that you can always write us. You can write us for the next couple of months, I guess. Mm-hmm. We'd love to hear your feedback. If you want to give us feedback about the announcement that we just made, we'd love to hear that too. You can email us
at the Game On Inbox.
That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
You're already forgetting.
And Flo is still manning the phones at the Game On hotline.
That's right, at 4138 Game On.
That's right. And we also want to ask you to be on the lookout for future episodes of some other podcasts of Ludology. It's Ryan Sturm and Jeff Engelstein's podcast, as well as the D6 Generation, because Cody and I will actually be participating in some future episodes of those shows as part of our farewell tour.
That's right. We're making the rounds one last time.
That's right.
And hey, why not pick up some Game On dice? They're soon to be collectible.
That's right. Yeah, no more additions of those being made. So anyway, we'll let the whole announcement sink in with you guys, and be sure to communicate with us on the Guild, on Board Game Geek, or via email or voicemail. And until next time,
Game On.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 4138-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on boardgamegeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at gameonpodcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on pulpgamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On!